Hey Loco sports fans, today's episode of the podcast is brought to you by The Preferred Pharmacy. If you've been using a big corporate pharmacy, you probably aren't getting great customer service, but it doesn't have to be that way. The Preferred Pharmacy accepts more insurance plans than most of the big guys, and they have everything you need, like high-quality, lab-tested CBD products and on-site immunizations, without the long wait times and red tape. So if you want to save time and keep your business local, stop by The Preferred Pharmacy in Okotie, conveniently located between Jersey Mike's and Las Palmas. It's like having a pharmacist in the family. Hey Loco sports fans, welcome to another edition of the Loco Sports Lowdown podcast. I am your host and Loco Sports founder Justin Jarrett, joined as always by Wes Kerr, and seems like as always now by Carlo Peruzza. Wes and Carlo, great to be back on the air with you guys. I love doing this every week, a little sense of normalcy for the week, and just kind of, you know, catch up about local sports and chat a little bit. What have you guys been up to this past week since we last talked?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of getting into this routine now. It's been a few weeks since we've gotten this kind of stay at home, don't go outside unless you have to routine, and I'm kind of getting in the swing of it now. And so kind of got the sense of what I'm supposed to do during this time and what my role is kind of in this period, which no one thought we would have had, but now we do. And so I've been able to kind of make the adjustments. I feel like now I'm kind of comfortable for how things are going. Obviously, you don't want to be in this time area forever because you don't have a lot of things. You don't have the mass gatherings. You don't have the live sports that we all love. And so, but I have kind of adjusted to this new sense of normalcy. This is really the new normal now.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. Definitely, you create new routines, and it takes a while to kind of settle into those habits and stuff. But we're starting to figure things out here as well, and kind of have a routine to get through the day now. And but yeah, it would be a lot easier if there was baseball on from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. every day right now. I could tell you that for sure. How about you, Carlo? What have you been up to?
Well, lately I've been up to a lot of homework. You know, the instructors at Georgia Southern have moved all their classes online. So we're getting towards the end of the semester, so that means I have these like 15-page papers due and quizzes and all that fun stuff. So I've been trying to do a lot of that, and then when I have no motivation to do that, I find myself trying to compensate for watching live sports. But so last night, like, I'm a fan of NASCAR. I was watching iRacing, so it'd be like drivers. They'd be in like these simulators and it'd be like a video game and they air it on like Fox Sports. So I'm like, this is crazy. I never thought in my life that I'd be watching video games on television and guys like Darryl Waltrip and Jeff Gordon would commentate on it. I think it's kind of crazy, but just what it is today. And then what else have I been up to? Really the only live, well, not really live, but the only current thing that's aired, I guess the WWE has still been doing their thing, and they had WrestleMania last week. So last week, and I watched WrestleMania. I mean, not too much going on, but trying to make the best of what I can do.
I got to tell you, those esports, there's been a lot of hate going towards to those esports the last couple of years. And you know what? This is a great time for that industry to really shine and get more views without all the live sports, because you could have esports without people congregating in one area. Just because that's the beauty of playing video games. And so the NBA, the NBA 2K, they had the NBA players all in a tournament just to give NBA fans something to watch with those players. And then, like you said, WrestleMania, WWE was doing that. And that's great. They're able to still have that entertainment in abnormal conditions. So good to see WWE still keeping up their content and their entertainment.
No, I was one of those who kind of laughed at esports. Like, who would want to watch people play video games? But I could definitely go for watching a couple high-level MLB The Show players go head-to-head right now. I would watch that live for sure, just to see some baseball. And yeah, my son, you know, Truman is a big baseball player. We're still trying to keep baseball in our lives in some way or another. But he has started saying if he can't be a professional baseball player, he wants to be a professional gamer. And he's been getting his time in on Fortnite. So maybe setting him up for a future there.
That's certainly an avenue. I mean, there's a guy who won millions of dollars, I believe, last year in Fortnite. And, you know, people will say all they want about that's not a real sport. But you know what? If you go to where the opportunities are and you're talented at something, you might as well pursue it. And I know some people always say video games, they rot their brain and all that. But and parents do have a point. The odds of becoming a professional video gamer or even a professional streamer on Twitch or any of that stuff is very, very low. So obviously the odds are low, but if the kid's really talented and you're a parent, then how do you say no if they have a chance to make millions of dollars?
That's right. Let them chase the dream. The odds are very low of making it pro in any professional sport too. And we still have our kids chase it for as long as they want. So no shame there. No judgment here. All right. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Talk a little bit of breaking news, which it's a little few and far between, scattered breaking news here, but we've got some locally sports related that USCB announced on Wednesday that they are moving in a new direction with their baseball program, letting Jeremy Christian go after 3.5 seasons and opening a national search. And Carlo and I both have a lot of personal experience with that program, have followed it. I've been involved with it in one way or another, either covering it or working there since the inception of the program, you know, going back to Rick Sofield in 2008. So I feel like I – or 2000 – yeah, 08, 09. So I feel like I have a great handle on it, and I know Carlo does too. I think folks would like to hear our insight a little bit. Only three head coaches in history. Rick Sofield was there for the first three seasons and then left – to take a job with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Most folks know that. He ended up as the Pirates' third base coach for a few years and then was let go a couple years back. He's still in the area, as a matter of fact. So I've had a couple people reach out to me and ask if he would be interested in taking that job again. And I don't know if that's even something that would be considered, but it's certainly an interesting consideration. And then you had Brian Llewellyn, who was Sofield's pitching coach, took the job on an interim basis and took the team to the NAIA World Series in his first season, stuck around for a few more years, got close to another World Series, had a great run before leaving to go back home to Pensacola Junior College. And then Jeremy Christian, bam, came in. And first season went really well. And then they struggled for a couple. And then this season, of course, was cut short. So an abrupt ending for him. I know he wasn't expecting it right now. The timing is really unusual. You know, nobody's really been in this position before. So, you know, if you were going to make a change at the end of the season, it's the end of the season. So I get it. But it is definitely a different situation. You know, Carlo and Wes both interested in your thoughts a little bit about not so much looking back, just because, you know, I mean, I think we all know that the program struggled the past couple of years and the pitching, particularly, they just couldn't find the pitchers they needed or develop them or whatever, for whatever reason, that the pitching was not there. But how attractive is this job to the coaches who are out there looking right now? And, you know, what kind of coaches are they going to be looking at, interviewing, potentially hiring, and what does that person have to do to get this program back to the level that it was a few years ago, where they're in the top 25 every year and trying to make it to NAIA World Series? So what do you guys think about this?
I think it's kind of a springboard kind of job where coaches will be there for a short time trying to help the program's success, but also trying to get their name out there. And for the guys who've taken this job before, I feel like that's a big motivator in terms of how well they do is if they can raise the program up in a short time and then move on to another school, maybe one that's a higher caliber than USCB, that is kind of why people could take this job. But obviously Christian, he grew the program well, but just a couple seasons that really didn't live up to their expectations, and so just really sad to see him go. But there's a reason why people take this job, and for Christian, I'd say he accomplished a good amount, but kind of unfortunate end.
Yeah, it's too bad because he is a great guy, and I think he established a lot of really good things in that program as far as the culture goes. You know, just kind of cleaning up some different things, but and trying to bring in, you know, quality guys, but it just, for whatever reason, didn't work out with the Dubs. And the conference is exceptionally difficult. I mean, every year they're going to have two or three teams that are in the top 10, top 15 in the NAIA, and is getting to the point where there would be, you know, top 25 teams were not making the conference tournament. So it's a very tough conference to compete in. You have to be able to recruit well, especially you have to have a lot of contacts in the junior college ranks and even the D1 ranks, where you can pick up a guy like, you know, a few years back when they got Dexter Price or Michael Heesch, who are the only two players in program history who have been drafted in the MLB draft. Both those guys were D1 transfers who found themselves out of the mix at their schools and were looking for a place to land where they could maybe get noticed, actually get the reps and get noticed, and they found it here. So you have to be able to bring those guys in, a lot of that just has to do with being connected to the right people and you know, hearing through the grapevine when a guy's looking to make a move. So I think you have to be able to build those relationships. But then I think the other area where they've kind of missed the boat a little bit is, and there's some inside baseball here I won't get into about how the financials work at USCB, but there's an incentive for the coaches at USCB with the way the finances work to recruit out of state or out of area. And for that reason, they often overlook a lot of local talent in certain programs in particular. And baseball has been one, I think, where they haven't recruited locally very well, both here in the Lowcountry and then also, you know, up into Charleston and over into South Georgia. And I think they can do a better job there to bring in a few talented kids who maybe have academic money already and don't need or could stay at home and save their family money that way. So that's one thing I think. Carlo, having been connected intimately with the program more recently than me and being there longer for BAM's tenure, what do you see as the areas where the new coach is going to have to excel to get this program back on track?
Yeah, so, you know, I've covered that program, especially with him, every single year, and then like full-time, two or three years while he was there. And I think the biggest thing, you know, things didn't go as what he would like. But I think, I mean, a lot of it was due to factors outside of his control. I mean, the injury bug had hit his teams so hard every single season. I mean, look, a guy like Nick Constant a couple years ago, that was an ace of the Sun Conference. Goes out, has a great season, next season, plays a couple games. You know, at one point, a couple years ago, his infielders, like three of them got hurt, and he had to use a catcher to play second base. I mean, like, you know, it's very unfortunate things. I think a big part of it that hurt him was, you know, the injuries. And now going forward, looking for a replacement, it's kind of interesting to look at it. I think now where we're at now and then where we're at when BAM came in is at two different places. Now, I think you're looking for somebody who wants to start a rebuild. I think you need to have a coach that is dedicated to going to be able to spend a couple years on this before they go into a really successful direction, in my opinion. And I think they need to go to recruiting. I think the pitching, you know, there's no surprise. The pitching has had issues in the past couple seasons, and we didn't have a full season. It looked like it had some potential, but early on, it wasn't as effective, I think, as everyone would like. So I think recruiting needs to be something. And who knows, man? Sometimes a new coach comes in and change of scenery, and sometimes things just gel. So, I mean, for Coach BAM, you know, that guy's given me so many opportunities. He's been so gracious every time that I wanted to do an interview or interview one of the players, like literally one of the best coaches I have ever dealt with for that. Never had an issue with him. And, you know, I've nothing but respect for the dude. I really liked him and had a lot of good moments out there. So this is it's kind of different.
Yeah, I'm a huge BAM Christian fan as well. I've also coached his son in rec ball. And, you know, I just love that family. And, you know, maybe he finds a high school coaching job, knows what direction life takes him. I look forward to catching up with him and seeing what his plans are, because, you know, he's a great part of our community, and I'd love to have him stick around here and be a part of it. But I also know that he, you know, his dream's to be a big time college coach, so he's probably going to chase it somewhere else.
Yeah, this is the type of situation where you're going to probably need someone to stay here for a longer period, just because of where the program is at and how you're saying it really needs some more tools and more pieces to contend in a pretty tough conference. So if you're going to want to take this job, you're going to have to be someone who I'm going to have to stick with it for the long haul. I'm going to have to dedicate myself for this program for the long term and kind of see the fruits of my labor through an extended period, because it's going to take some time to really bring in those key pieces and have the success that USCB was hoping to achieve earlier in their program's history and in the future. So that's kind of a hire that I'm looking for here if I'm the AD at USCB.
Yeah, and having been part of the last search, the part of the committee that hired Bingham, actually, I guess I have some insight into kind of the kind of candidates that I would expect them to get. And they're going to get NAIA coaches from cold weather areas are going to apply. You always get that in this area, people who just want to move to this area. I do know that a lot of people in NAIA ball, small college ball, believe that this is a sleeping giant of a program. The biggest elephant in the room is that they don't play on campus. They play in a converted rec field in Hardeeville. And when you take candidates out there, wherever they're coming from, whether they're an assistant coach or a head coach, these facilities don't measure up to probably wherever they are. And so that is a tough selling point. They need to get on campus. I think that the kind of candidate that they would really go head over heels for is someone who has raised money or been part of the process of raising money to build a facility at their previous school. And I think they're going to look real hard at somebody like that, I would think. And that's probably going to be one of those northern coaches who's had some success somewhere, been somewhere for a long time, almost like a retirement job, a pre-retirement job to get to the coast, to a warmer area, and see how far it takes them. And, you know, there's a hesitation with ADs a lot of times to hire that kind of candidate, because you just don't know how committed they're going to be to it. They may get down here, give you 2 years, and then call it quits. But if it's the right kind of candidate, you know, recognizing that you're a small college and a stepping stone type of program, you have to understand that if you make the best hire, regardless of what kind of hole they fit into, what kind of mold, if you make the best hire, there's a good chance they're going to move on to something better within 3 or 4 years. I mean, that's just the reality of small college athletics. And maybe you hit the jackpot and you get that lifer who sticks around forever because this is a great area, and maybe you find that diamond in the rough who wants to retire here and they're only in their 30s, so you get them for 30 years. But more than likely you're going to be looking for a new coach within 5 years for one reason or another. So I think they will keep that in mind, and I think fundraising experience is going to be a huge factor. If they have somebody who has shown they can generate community interest and excitement and raise money, and they can get that field on campus where it backs up to Sun City, and Sun City softball players can drive their golf carts up to the berm and watch the game from there, then USCB baseball is going to be a sleeping giant that can play in the World Series every year. And if they don't get that person and they keep playing in Hardeeville, then, you know, they may have some success like they had out there with Sofield and Llewellyn, or they may be right back here another again in 4 or 5 years. And, you know, it's no easy task. You know, having been through that, there will be a ton of great candidates on paper, and you'll interview them, and one of them may or may not stand out as the obvious candidate, but it's a lot easier to get it wrong than it is to get it right. And it's a tough job, and unfortunately it didn't work out with Bam, but hopefully they'll do better next time. Well, that was a very thorough discussion of an NAIA baseball job opening, but such is life in the age of the pandemic. So let's shift gears here and talk about something that we kind of hinted at last week, and we're going to take a little bit deeper now. If you could pick one team from the spring season that didn't get to finish their season, who would it be? So Wes, we'll start out with you. I think this was your question. Which team are you going to bring back to finish out their season?
Well, I'm going to have to go with the surprising Battery Creek Soccer Boys. They started as well as they ever could have. They began the season 5-0, and not even that, they didn't concede even one goal. And that's amazing for a team that already matched last season's win total in just a handful of games. And they finished it off with a 7-0 stomping of John Paul II. So in just five matches, including a forfeit, you got three players, Sonny Quintanilla, Kenny Diaz, and Alex Cruz, all with at least seven goals or more, and they were all seniors. I mean, that's just heartbreaking to see a team. They were so dialed in. They were so hungry for a special season, and then they were denied the opportunity to keep playing because of something that wasn't their fault. And you know, they were just about to take on May River at the Shark Tank on March 17th before things were halted. And man, if I could go back in time and stop this virus from spreading, I would do it for these talented athletes. And they were having their banner season. It's just very unfair.
That was a great off the radar pick. I had them on my list to consider. I have a bunch of teams on my list to consider, but that's a great pick. I was really excited to see what they could do and looking forward to that matchup with May River, and now we'll probably never get it. So very unfortunate, but hopefully Garland Cole can keep them going next season when they get back on the pitch and have another great year. Carlo, which team are you going to bring back for the spring to see how it turns out for them?
Yeah, for me, you know, Drake has a song called Back to Back, and I want to see May River soccer go back to back, winning another state championship. So I would have to say Misa and the boys, because I don't think they were losing this year. I saw them play Oceanside Academy. They looked lights out. I mean, I think that team is destined to win a state championship. I know it was young. There wasn't too much of the season, but Misa did such a good job of front-loading that schedule. Everyone was ready to go. Losing was not an option, and I really think that team was going to make a run and go deep in the playoffs or back to that state championship game this year.
That was the first team that came to mind for me, but I knew if I gave y'all the first crack that there was no chance the May River boys were making it to me, so I went a little deeper on my list. All right, after much deliberation, I can't believe I almost forgot about them. So grateful I remembered at the last minute. Beaufort High boys track, that's mine. Back-to-back state champs. They were going to try for three in a row, and now they don't get to do it. And so that one's the one for me. And really, track didn't even get into their season. They had like one meet. So we really didn't even get to see what anybody could do. And of course, nobody's in top form at this time of the year. Everybody's building up to the end of the season. So Beaufort High boys track is definitely the team that I would have liked to have been able to see what they could have done this year, see if they could have made it three in a row. Track season was going to be awesome this year, especially on the boys' side, man. Beaufort, Hilton Head, May River, all just loaded. And now, of course, really no track season this year. So very disappointing. There are a bunch of teams, though. You know, we talked about some of those matchups we wanted to see, like Hilton Head versus Bluffton girls soccer and boys soccer. Man, there were so many teams to be excited about this spring. And what a bummer that we won't get to watch them. But all right, yeah, that's three good ones right there. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back to do some senior shout outs and get into some interviews here on the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast. Hey, Loco Sports fans, when you hear Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, think advanced, local, and specialized therapy care. The team at Horizon prides themselves on the diversity of their 30-plus specialized treatment programs, including advanced sports medicine and orthopedic care, as they offer the area's only Alter-G treadmill and have an indoor heated resistance therapy pool. For nearly 15 years, Horizon's outpatient, physical, occupational, and sports medicine programs have been addressing the needs of athletes, weekend warriors, and their fans. At any level, at any age or stage, their specialized therapists and athletic trainers are ready to get you back in the game. Visit HorizonRehabilitation.com for more information or call 843-671-REHAB. That's 843-671-REHAB. Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, proud sponsors of LocoSports.com. All right, back for more here on the Loco Lowdown podcast. Going to get to some senior shout-outs. I admit that I have not gotten as many of these published this week as I would have liked, just getting busy with other things and working on some stuff behind the scenes. But we did get a couple of them posted. Had a great one that was actually sent in by one of the by the Bluffton boys soccer team. They had one of their senior students who works in media students, write it up, and I edited it a bit, but it was nicely done. He didn't want credit for it for some reason, but he did a great job on it. And that was on Gabriel Hugo Guadagno from Bluffton Boys Soccer. And, you know, Gabriel, this was an interesting one because Gabriel was already preparing to lose most of his senior season to an ACL injury in the fall. But he had this glimmer of hope that he might be able to make it back and try to lead the Bobcat to a state championship. And unfortunately, it looks like he will not get that opportunity. And so, you know, these seniors who have lost, you know, the end of their senior season, well, this one lost his entire senior season. Unfortunately, he didn't even get to play in those handful of games to start the year because of an injury. So that's a tough one for him. The good news is that Gabriel does have an opportunity to play in college, and he is looking forward to making his announcement of where he's going to play in college soon. Hopefully you guys had a chance to take a look at this profile on Gabriel and have some feedback on him.
Yeah, just unfair. He's denied that, especially after hopes of coming back after the ACL injury. I mean, you work so hard through all that to come back and play the senior year, and then all of a sudden, there it goes. And I mean, he's a lifeblood of this team. He was named the most valuable player during his junior season. And we just talked about the teams that we were going to miss seeing play this spring. And imagine how good this Bluffton team would be right after they were set to get him back, right before the playoffs would start, because they were already playing like title contenders, I thought, at the start of this season. So I'm excited to hear his college decision. I hope he gets some well-deserved attention, because he's been so key to this Bluffton squad. And my goodness, I mean, that's really unfortunate, all the work he's put in to come back, and then all of a sudden the season's over, and his time appears to be over at Bluffton, but his soccer career is not. He's going to go and play in college.
Yeah, it's pretty unfortunate for a player like that. First of all, for the injury bug, I mean, missing most of the season because of the ACL is one thing, and then when you're going to be able to come back, okay, you can be like, I'm going to train really hard, I'm going to rehab hard, I'm going to get over this, get through this injury, and then find out that you won't even be able to come back and have a senior season at all. It's very difficult news, but as Wes said, luckily enough, he's going to probably get to play in the collegiate level, so his soccer days aren't completely done, but it's just crazy. Once again, shows you how powerful sports can be, and a lot of times I think everyone takes it for granted about especially playing in high school and how special a senior season can be. You know, for him, he's a very talented individual. He's going to play collegiate soccer, and he'll have to say that he'd even have a senior season in high school, which I don't think many can say that at the collegiate level, saying they'd even play senior sports in high school.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. And this next one is, we just published it today on Thursday, but this next one is the class of student athletes that we've really feel for, and that is Grace Hetrick from Battery Creek softball, because she's not planning to play in college, so this is it for her, and she was really looking forward to this season. You know, she was going to be one of the players they were counting on to step up. Battery Creek, of course, state champions last year, but graduated just a ton of talent, and Bob Lehman taking over that program from Chris Carr this year, and, you know, kind of a rebuilding year for them. But she was one of those players who was going to be counted on to play a bigger role and become a leader. And so she was looking forward to that opportunity and that challenge, and now it's taken away, and she's played more than likely her last softball game, you know, competitively. So, you know, this one, these are the ones that really hurt for me, are the kids who aren't going to have that opportunity to play at the next level. And so this was it for them. This was the pinnacle of their career. And, you know, now it's just chopped off. And so that's really tough to see for Grace and for players like her.
Man, I'm devastated. You know, softball was, it was her life. Her dad played baseball at Winthrop. So this was her sport as a kid, as a child growing up. And she, she played second base during the most of her career, and she's going to move to third this year to replace Emily Crosby. And so this was looking to be a very exciting and very special senior year. Going into this year, she adjusted well to playing third base, and now not having the opportunity to finish her career in her senior year, I mean, I'm just sick. I mean, no student athlete should be denied an opportunity, especially when they won't play in college in their final year of competitive sports. Going away just like that, like the snap of the fingers with this pandemic, I am very sick for her. I just feel so sad. I mean, this was her chance to finish off her career on a great note. She did anyway, because in 2019, they did get their state championship in softball, but losing that senior year, nothing could replace that.
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing for her is the fact that last season the team won the state championship, and she got to see those seniors, the girls like Mackenzie Young, Emily Crosby, go out their senior season winning a state championship. Obviously, it's a much different team now than it was then, but she doesn't even get to try to chase it. She don't get to try and make a playoff run, nothing. And I think that's the biggest thing that it's kind of sad in this situation, is the fact that the girls before her, she got to firsthand see them have all this success, and she's unable to even help contribute to that because of circumstances out of everyone's control.
Yeah, that's a great point, Carlo, about, you know, getting to see her seniors last year win the state championship and not even getting a chance to chase it this year. It's a tough situation for everybody, and really feel for these kids, and you know, they're always going to have a little bit of a hole in their hearts from this season, and that's really tough. And let's don't forget about the coaches too. I mean, you know, coaches were excited about their teams, and some of them probably had state championship aspirations, realistic ones, and they won't get that chance either. So I know, just as a rec baseball coach, I was excited about my rec team this year. We didn't even get to play a game, and so that's really disappointing. And so I know that the high school coaches, college coaches, who have put so much more of their lives into it, are really going to be devastated by this too. And speaking of one of those coaches, We've got an interview. Wes was able to catch up with Hilton Head High baseball coach Joel Klock this week. Wes, let's hear a little bit about your interview with Coach Klock.
Yeah, I had a chance to catch up with Coach Klock of the Hilton Head High School Seahawks, head baseball coach, and he just got his very first season as head coach underway after a couple of years as an assistant. He's originally all the way from Buffalo, New York, but he came down here to teach after graduation. Had a great career at Niagara from 2011 to 2014. He was a utility guy. He played outfield, he played first, and then he spent some time on the mound. I mean, you don't really see that very often at such a high level of play. So we talked about his baseball career throughout the years, and some thoughts about potentially losing out on this season. Baseball has been his life, and we got some good content out of Klock. And here's our interview with Hilton Head baseball coach Joel Klock here on the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast. All right, I'm now joined by Hilton Head Seahawks head baseball coach Joel Klock. Coach, how are you doing these days? How's the quarantine life going for you?
About as good as it can be, I guess, just as everybody else, trying to stay busy. You know, it's the tough situation we're in here, but everybody's in it together. So it is what it is right now, Wes.
Certainly crazy times for everyone, and let's start. Can you tell me when you got your start in baseball and what helped your love of the game growing up?
For sure. I've been playing baseball all my life, really. I've got an older brother, 2 years older than I am, and he had always been playing. So I always had somebody to play catch with, always somebody to compete with growing up. Definitely got the love of it from my dad. My dad's a big baseball guy, so our family always had been. So that's kind of where it all started, you know, way back. She's 4 or 5 years old, and just, you know, playing catch in the yard and then working your way through T-ball, Little League, and all the way up through. So definitely starting there.
That's great. And you grew up right outside of Buffalo, New York. And was there any sort of disadvantage once you played in high school, any sort of disadvantage in the recruiting game playing your ball up there compared to the guys who are able to play, say, in Florida, other southern states that have some more access to baseball year-round and generally draw more attention?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's tough because our season there, you know, we can't if we're lucky to get on the field in April, really, you know, it's a shorter season. But I think it's a little more difficult to get recruited, obviously, because you have to travel. If you want to go play somewhere, you got to go play in these bigger tournaments in the South. But actually, the interesting thing is I get recruited and go play at the school that was only 15 minutes away from my house. So it was a blessing and a curse, I guess, playing in the colder weather, but it allowed for us to really play all three sports and continue to do a lot of different things. So that's kind of how recruiting went in New York for me.
What was the biggest draw to join the Purple Eagles at Niagara?
So really the biggest draw for me to go to school, actually both my parents ended up going to Niagara as well. So they were both alumni from the university. But really what drew me to the school was the relationship that I had with our head coach there, Rob McCoy. You know, he was a guy who believed in me. And I think that's really what every, you know, high school kid really wants is that person to really want them to be at their school. And I can really feel that from Coach Mack. You know, I mean, I remember this is my senior year. It was my senior year in football, and we're in the playoffs and we're playing in a game that's raining and cold. It's in November and it's brutal weather. And after the game, we win late in the game. Anyway, we win, and I come walking off the field, and there's Coach McCoy, you know, standing there on the sideline. And I was like, "You've been here this whole game?" And he's like, "Yeah, I had to come watch it." So I think at that point, I was like, "Wow, this guy's going to do these things for me. I can't wait to go join him and go play for him." So I think that's really what it was for me.
How awesome is that? So you said you've played other sports, multiple sports in high school, and we had an interview a couple months ago with NFL legendary quarterback Ken Anderson, who played so many years with the Cincinnati Bengals, and he was saying how many benefits there are to not just play your chosen sport, but others as well. Do you think playing football, basketball helped you in your baseball career going forward into college?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really develops a lot of athleticism in playing different sports. It definitely builds that competitive nature in a lot of different sports as well. You know, baseball is a tough game because you need to spend a lot of time with a lot of skill-specific training. But I think playing other sports is really beneficial in just terms of athleticism and developing that competitive nature for sure.
So you went to Niagara, and not every player gets time both on the plate and on the mound, but you were able to do both. How cool was it to get that opportunity?
Yeah, it was great. Like you said, I mean, I went in there. I went in as my freshman year thinking I was just going to be a left-handed pitcher. Ended up getting some at-bats in the fall just in our inter-squad games. And at the end of the fall, coach was like, "Hey, you know what? You can swing it a little bit too, and we're going to get you some at-bats." And, you know, come the spring, I was, you know, in the starting rotation on the mound, but then also DHing. And halfway through the year, our starting first baseman ended up breaking a bone in his hand. So I took over there. So yeah, I mean, to be able to play both ways was an awesome experience and something, like you said, not many people really get to do. So I definitely loved having all part of that.
So you have your name in the record books at Niagara. You're tied with Aaron Mendel for the most walks in program history with 104. How have you developed that mental side of the game to lay off on more pitches to get those free bases?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, a couple, we always had a big joke at the end of the year, actually end of my senior year with that, because I was chasing that record, that infamous record there. But, you know, it's kind of just being able to go up there with that mentality of having an approach of knowing what I want to go hit and making sure I get that pitch and I'm not swinging at things out of the strike zone, make sure I'm not helping that pitcher out. You know, it's hard enough to hit in general, but I think just having that mentality of going after a pitch, hunting something that I want to get, really kind of helped me lay off some of those good pitcher's pitches that were just out of the zone.
Talk to me about the grind of playing 4 years of college baseball. I always thought that no one has it harder due to the number of games you play in a season and coupled with the many practices and workouts that come on the calendar as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you said it exactly there. It's definitely a bit of a grind, and you've really got to, you know, prioritize your time, really work on, obviously you're going to be having your workouts in the morning, you're getting in the weight room in the morning, you go into class, you go into practice in the afternoon, and then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're traveling to go play. So at least in the spring. So it's a tough time. I think what really gets you through it is having really great guys on the team. having a really good coaching staff and having guys that you really want to be with. But it's tough. You got to prioritize your time, and you got to really love what you're doing there, or else it's going to be pretty tough.
So you were an education major in college. You took a job here at Hilton Head High. What brought you here from snowy Buffalo all the way down to paradise here in the South Carolina Lowcountry?
Yeah. So I graduated in May of 2014 with a degree in education. Like I had mentioned earlier, I've got an older brother who's 2 years older than I am, and he played baseball in college at St. John Fisher College, a small school in Rochester, New York. And he had a couple buddies that actually already started teaching down here in January of that year. So I got a call that summer in August, and they said, hey, you know, we've got a job open here. If you want to come down, why don't you apply and see if it works. And just a couple days later, I was on my way down here to start my new career. So it was about as simple as it gets. You know, they gave me a call and said, hey, there's a job here. And lo and behold, it worked out.
Excellent. Did you take this position with an eye on coaching baseball here, or did you expect to eventually have a chance to get that coaching job here at Hilton High School?
Yeah, so I think growing up, or at least going through college, you know, what kind of drew me to education was the ability to coach, and that's really one of the big things I wanted to do. So I ended up starting in Hilton Head, helping coach the middle school football team with my buddy Aaron Benton there. I didn't coach baseball the first year, and I kind of thought it was going to be okay, you know, after playing my whole life, take a year off and see where I'm at with baseball, but I missed it so much. And so for the following year, at that point in time, the head coach was Blair Carson, and he had contacted me and said, hey, we got a job open as an assistant JV coach. You know, if you want in the program, you know, we'd love to have you, kind of thing. And that's how I got back into baseball, and that's how I got involved with Hilton Head Baseball.
So you were just getting to the start of the season this year as a head coach of the Seahawks, and all of a sudden everything comes to a stop because of a global pandemic. It's a nightmare scenario across the world. And what were your initial thoughts when this news came across just very short after the season started?
Yeah, I think my reaction, just like a lot of people's, it was just you really couldn't believe it. It's a situation that obviously no one has ever dealt with before. You know, it's something so crazy. But at first it was, okay, well, how long is this going to last? Are we going to be able to get back and play? Because you really think about all the guys, but you really think about your seniors. I think every coach across the state, probably across the nation, just thinks about that. And you know, we are lucky to have a really, really awesome group of seniors. We got 8 guys that have really, you know, carried this program and done a lot of really good things for this program. And you really want to see them go out on a high note. And, you know, you'd think that this year was that. So it's really tough. Immediately you just think about those 8 guys amongst everybody else on the team, in the program. But that's your immediate reaction at first when you're hearing about this.
And specifically for this group, what will you remember most from this class of 2020 who all of a sudden may never see another high school game?
Yeah. These guys, man, this group of 8 seniors, they work harder than anybody you could imagine, anybody that you could ever imagine. These guys, I think being a first year head coach with this group of seniors made it really, really easy on me, because they basically run the program themselves. You know, they police themselves, they work hard together, they bring each other together. And as a coach, it was really easy. The difficult part was trying to challenge them every day, because you'd bring something to the table you thought was tough, and these guys would just come out and crush it in fall workouts and the mental game classes that we would have, you know, in practice, everything. You throw at them and they handle it, and they just destroy it, and you got to keep moving on and keep trying to push them a little bit harder. So I always remember about this group, just a really tight-knit group that just works extremely, extremely hard.
How are you able to learn as an assistant coach techniques and ways to better your coaching strategies when you eventually got that job?
Yeah, I think anybody in baseball really, I think the important thing is just talking to people, you know, getting around as many other baseball guys as you possibly can. I think that's why I was lucky enough going through college. I had a really great group of coaches all throughout. You know, we went through a couple different pitching coaches, a couple different hitting coaches in college, and taking bits and pieces of what each one of them brings to the table, playing summer ball throughout college, playing in a bunch of different teams there. Again, picking the brains of different guys that you're playing with, coaches you're you know, being coached by. And then also once I got, you know, when I started to coach, talking to other coaches, going to clinics, going to hear people talk, and just kind of molding a little bit of what they have to bring to the table into my own coaching style and putting it to work. So I think that's really a big deal for any coaches, just to talk to other baseball guys and see what they can do.
I wanted to talk about J.J. Richardson, pitcher here for the Hilton Head Seahawks, and he's going to play at Erskine. An excellent junior year, had that tough lower state playoff loss against Airport. Certainly a bad taste in his mouth that he wanted to avenge this year, but he's still got a lot of baseball left to play.
Absolutely, yeah. J.J.'s a really talented kid. You know, he's going to be our guy, and he's had, in the short bit of the season we had so far this year, he had thrown really, really well. He's a guy who just comes out there and he fills up the strike zone and he comes after you. He's a competitor, and, you know, he threw unbelievable for us last year. We're going to rely on him a lot this year again. And he's another guy who's just super eager to learn. You know, he works hard. He's toying with his craft quite a bit. You know, he's just developing that changeup a little bit better this year. And just a really good guy in the bump. So Erskine's really lucky to get a guy like that, because he's going to continue to get bigger and stronger, and I can't wait to see what he does when he does that.
Speaking of Seahawks in college, you were here when Carmen Majinski was here, who's now projected to be a first-round pick in the Major League Baseball draft from the University of South Carolina. Your thoughts on Carmen's career at USC and what you see, what you think's going to come next for him?
Yeah, Carmen's a special kid, man. There's nothing you can say about him. He's different. You know, he really is. Obviously, you get a guy who's 96 plus on the mound, but what's different about Carmen is just his work ethic. You saw that when he was a senior. I was lucky enough to join the varsity staff his senior year, and just see him work every single day. And he really has that blue collar, that workman-like mentality that shows up and just does his work every single day and tries to get better. One of the best parts about Carmen is just, you know, his willingness to give back to it too. You know, this, obviously there's lots of press around Carmen obviously this year and expected to do a lot of great things, and you know, we know he will. But even during our winter workouts this year, you know, when he was home, he'd come out, he'd get his work in first, and he'd stick around and he'd say, "Hey, I'm going to go help these guys." And you'll see him pull a freshman or sophomore to the side and go work individually, T-work, or do something in the bullpen with these guys. And obviously something he didn't have to do, but he just, that's who he was. You know, that's what he wants to do, and that's how he helps out. So that's going to carry Carmen through his baseball career, and we can't wait to see what he does, because he's going to be very, very, very special.
Absolutely. So you've had a lot more time on your hands recently. I mean, you still have to manage teaching high school classes, but without any baseball on, how have you been able to fill that void in your life during this unexpected shutdown?
Exactly. It's been tough. Get a lot of more yard work in, I think, than I had anticipated. So I've been able to do some of that. It's interesting because, you know, we're still from the high school league, still in a waiting a sit and wait period a little bit. Hopefully we can get back to school in May, and hopefully we can push something together this spring, but, you know, it's tough to see. But you're already starting to think about, you know, what we can do once we get back on the field. You know, just looking at and talk to a couple different guys. You know, I've got some old teammates that are coaching in college now or still playing pro ball. So you reach out to those guys and just kind of pick their brains a little bit too. I think it's important to always kind of continue to do some of that stuff. So that's what I've been doing. That's how I've been occupying my time. And that's, you know, just hoping for this thing to clear up and be able to get on the field again.
Awesome. So there is still a chance we could play in the spring of 2020, but let's look forward to 2021 and give me your assessment of how you think your squad's going to look when everything should be back to normal.
Yeah, so for next year, we've got another good group, another great senior class there. We offensively, I think we're going to be really, really tough. We've got a lot of guys that are in this lineup now. You look at Kyle Markowitz, who's going to be playing center field for us again. He started last year as a sophomore. That's going to be at the top of the lineup. We got some really good bats that were just getting hot this year. It really would be exciting to see. Daniel Keever's playing a really good shortstop. He's got a live arm. You got Tate Miller, Jackson Philpott, two guys that are really swinging the bat well. And then you got that other Majinski kid coming up, the youngest Majinski, Juju Majinski. He's a sophomore this year, so coming up next year as a junior. Exciting to see him too, because he's another guy who's really live on the mound and played a really good first base for us so far in the first couple games, and another guy who can swing it. So I think we're going to be really solid there. We're going to develop a little bit more on the mound. We've got a guy, Jack Mascherocco, that'll be coming back. He threw some really good innings, again, early on this year. He's a guy who's cold as ice, man. He just comes in there and does his job. And so he's really exciting to watch. So, I'm excited about it. And we got a good group of guys coming from the JV that are going to be coming up, just getting them to develop a little bit more and working hard on the mound. And I think we're going to have another good year. So exciting to see there.
Well, baseball has been a big part of your life. What has it meant to you during all the way back to your childhood now to your time as a head coach of a high school program?
Yeah, I mean, baseball's, it's always been it. Baseball's been my life. It's kind of who I've, it's something that I always loved to be around, play the game, and now to coach the game. I think it's interesting taking a step back and being, the coach now. It's nice to be able to work with these guys. And hopefully share some of the knowledge that us as coaches we've seen and developed and taken in over our course of our careers and things like that. And I think at Hilton Head we've got an amazing coaching staff that is able to help all of our guys with that. I've been able to coach with Matt Bowman the last couple of years. He's been with the varsity program since I've been there, and he brings a lot to the table with these guys, and these guys really enjoy working with him. And Jeremy Willard as our pitching coach this past year. Patrick Bulwer is another guy who's been in the program for a little while. So it's really cool to see that. But, man, this game is so special to all of us, and we just want to share it with our players, and hopefully they can take something away from that.
Joel Clark, head coach of the Hilton Head Island Seahawks. Coach, thanks so much for joining us today, and I hope everything gets back to normal pretty soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Wes. Appreciate it. Go Hawks.
All right, great stuff. Yeah, I was excited for Coach Clark to, get his career underway as a head coach. He's been an instrumental part of that program under Coach Soucy for a couple of years, and I know they were excited about him taking over, and he had a very talented squad, so I was looking forward to seeing what they could do, but, we'll see next year. There is no next year for our next interview subject as far as high school baseball goes, but he will be playing for my Mizzou Tigers next year. Carlo was able to catch up with Paul Winland Jr. from Buford High Baseball. Carlo, tell us a little bit about what you and Paul were able to talk about.
Yeah, baseball is one of my favorite sports to cover, and a team that I really enjoyed covering is the Buford Eagles baseball team. And unfortunately, I haven't really been able to cover them too much. I think I've covered them a couple times.
Whenever I saw Paul, whenever Paul would come up to bat, it's just something different about him. You could tell, something different, and a wonderful player. And this year, I covered them when they played May River. And unfortunately, I came a little too late. I come to the ballpark, and Justin was there, and Justin's like, you just missed Paul hitting a homer. I was like, oh, great. I would love to see that. But he's a very talented individual who's going to play at a big-time SEC program in D1 baseball, and I think the sky's the limit for the kid. I really wish he would have played out this past season. I think that Buford team would have done great things. And, one thing with Paul, I think Paul is primed to be a winning player because of the experience and success that he's had at Buford. I mean, the good thing with him is he's had that winning mentality, and he is already instilled in him. He knows how to win, and I've interviewed him in the past after games and stuff. Always very positive, always tells me what he needs to work on, always tells me how he's going to achieve it, and, he's a realist. So I figured it'd be a great Paul would be a great one to do a little senior showcase interview with. Today I'm here with a very special guest. I'm here with Paul Winland, senior at Buford High School. Paul's been a big part of the baseball team for a bunch of years now. And it's crazy, right? Your senior season, and Paul, you know, has it finally begin to sunk in a little bit that unfortunately your senior season may be in jeopardy and may not really get to happen because of this whole virus?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's crazy how this whole thing is unfolded on us. I mean, I don't think anybody would have expected this to happen, but yeah, it's definitely sunken in within these last, you know, 2-3 weeks that we've been off. And I still try to work out, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, hitting 4 or 5 times, but it's just, it's sad, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned that you've been working out. What are ways in which athletes all around the Loco could work out and train during the virus right now?
I mean, for me, I've been doing a lot more cardio, I would say. Because, you know, I can't – all the weight rooms and schools are closed right now, so you can't get in a weight room really. And I've been doing, I guess, a lot more like calisthenic work. And just like a lot of push-ups, pull-ups, curls, a bunch of stuff like that.
And now, how have the rest of the seniors on your team been taking this? Have you guys been kind of like coping with each other at all?
Yeah. We have our own little group chat that, you know, we talk about baseball and whatnot, and it's, you know, it's sad. I mean, we'll still get together, play some basketball, you know, but it's just, you know, a sad time, you know, just reminiscing and, you know, knowing, thinking that it's over, you know, this 4 years that I've been, you know, with those guys, with this team, and it's, yeah, it's just sad.
Has Coach Riley reached out to you guys at all since the season's been paused?
Yes. Coach Riley actually reached out to me yesterday. So they're supposed to do a little senior thing for us, which is really nice. You know, that's really, really gracious, you know, for them to do it for us. And that shows the leadership that he has, you know, being a coach of our team and a great man.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys deserve any recognition you guys can get right now. Now, looking back at it, I guess we're kind of looking back at your baseball career right now at Buford. Do you have a favorite moment?
Jeez, favorite moment. I would either say my freshman year when we won freshman year. That was really cool. Or either when I threw a no-hitter against Collison, I want to say last year, 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. Those were fun times.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, both great milestones for you. Mm-hmm. What are you going to miss the most on the team? I have a feeling the answer is going to be team chemistry here, but what are you going to miss the most with the Buford boys?
Oh, definitely team chemistry, you know, because with me, a lot of these guys, you know, I might not see again because I'm going up to Missouri in the summer, the second month of summer, and my parents are moving up. So, I mean, I'm not really going to come down, you know, to Buford a lot. And a lot of these guys, you know, I'll never see again. So, you know, that chemistry and that knowing that you won't get to see these guys again, it's sad.
Now, you mentioned that you're going to play at Mizzou. What went into that decision of choosing that school?
So I went up early junior year, I want to say. Yeah. Like beginning September 1st, exactly, of junior year. And, you know, I'm a Cardinals fan. I don't know if you knew that, but my father, he's from the St. Louis area. So Cardinals fan, Blues fan, used to be a Rams fan when they're in St. Louis, but I'm a Missouri fan too. So it was like my dream school. So when I talked to them, they saw me in the summer, and they really liked what they saw. So I went up for a visit September 1st, like I said, and it was surreal, you know, when I went up there. Just to be a fan of the school, it was surreal, and I just love the atmosphere there. Love the coaching staff, really good guys.
Well, I'm sure that you have a lot of goals to set at Mizzou, and you have a lot of work that's not even started yet. When you signed with them, when you knew it was official, was that kind of your moment of really looking back and being like, wow, you know, I've accomplished one of my goals I have set for myself?
Yeah, it definitely was. It was that was the main goal. You know, looking at it, say, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you know, play college baseball. You're like, that's a pretty big goal. I mean, I feel like now it's like, I'm reminiscing more about it, you know, since, you know, we've had this time off, and how precious, you know, time is, you know, missing out on this last year.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, with all this stuff going on, is it just really making you, I guess, I don't know, more excited to play, more excited to get to Mizzou, just trying to escape all this stuff right now? Is that pretty much what's going through your head?
I mean, yeah. You know, this time, I mean, this, I feel like this time really separates people, you know, from people that, you know, could take this as an excuse or whatever. But, you know, I still work out 4 or 5 times a week just to get ready for that next stage, you know. You always have to work.
Definitely. And I think, you know, working is something that has really gave you all of your success. Now, do you think you have, so what are some goals? What are some things you want to accomplish while you're in college?
You know, just on a, I guess, a personal aspect, just meet new people. Just not even like with baseball, but just meet new people. You know, I feel like that's the point of college. You know, which I love, because I'm going to Missouri, so, I mean, there's going to be a lot of new people.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to know anybody, but just meeting new people, you know, making those lifelong friends. I think that's, I mean, 2 really big goals there. And, you know, just trying to better myself for the rest of my life, whether that's, you know, a baseball career after, or just, you know, a different career in a different occupational field.
And now, what are you going to be studying there?
I'm going to be studying fisheries and wildlife, like rec. So I could be like out of college, so like a DNR officer or something like that.
Now, when you graduate, as of now, are you trying to pursue maybe professional baseball, or would you like to do the DNR thing, or are you just going to decide when you get to that point of your life?
Oh, I'm, you know, professional baseball, that's the ultimate, you know, career that I want to pursue. And, I mean, I've talked to some pro scouts. So, I mean, so that's definitely a possibility that's in the near future. But, yeah, that would definitely be, you know, the number one in DNR. I feel like anything, you know, outside, like a job outside would fit me, would suit me the best. Because I don't like being, you know, cooped up inside all day. Like, this time, it's a struggle for me. Everybody's saying, you know, social distancing and all that. It's just a struggle because I'd love to be outside, you know?
Yeah, I think it's been a struggle for everybody, especially down here. But last question for you, Paul. What is the mentality and the mindset that you are going to have next year and your time at Mizzou?
I mean, I think it's, you know, for your freshman year, I think you have to have an open mind. You have to be open-minded, you know, because you're going to meet so many new different philosophies of, you know, thinking and coaching. So you're going to have to keep it open-minded and just, you know, learn from those seniors and those guys that have been in those moments and have been through that program before.
Absolutely. Well, Paul, I wish you nothing but the best, man, and look forward to watching you play at Mizzou. But take care,
yes,
man.
Sir. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to Paul Wendland Jr. wearing the black and gold, being a Mizzou Tiger next year. Thanks for catching up with him, Carlo. That's good stuff. All right. Well, one last thing on our list that we wanted to get to before we wrap it up this week. And, you know, one of the things that I've taken a lot of heart in is seeing people who are doing good in our community during this tough time and helping out others in need. And this story came across our radar last week, and it's really phenomenal. A couple of local junior golfers, Savannah Hilton and Jonathan Grizz, teamed up, and it was Savannah's idea, and she brought Jonathan along for the ride, and he started helping out as well. And they put together these goodie bags with snacks and nice notes and things to deliver to the local healthcare workers and community heroes They went to the fire stations, you know, just all the essential folks who are keeping us going during this time and really putting their lives on the line for us, and put together these little goodie bags and started delivering them. And now they're raising money to try to keep it going, because they use their own funds that they had set aside for traveling to golf tournaments this spring and summer. And they're using those funds to get this started. But now they're raising money to try to keep it going. And just an awesome story, and great to see young people in our community who are going the extra mile and looking to make an impact on others.
Yeah, what an outstanding idea by an outstanding golfer to really put this thing together. That money that these guys have been saving up for these big tournaments, so they choose to use instead for a phenomenal cause. And they put our community before golf, because right now there are things that are bigger than our favorite sports right now. And using these funds to create homemade thoughts from the heart, thanking these heroes, because they are our American heroes right now, for what they are doing to help our community and our country, is just so awesome. Think about what these first responders, what these medical workers have to go to. They are going to war out on those front lines to help keep our people safe. Such a amazing thing that they are doing. I mean, this is very. I would be frightened coming in there every day and going to the hospitals and having to put my life on the line. So these guys are doing amazing things for our community. I applaud both Savannah Hilton and Jonathan Grizz for seeing this wonderful idea through. And not only that, I think they're also challenging us as a community. They're for their GoFundMe, they're giving a challenge to write 10 thank you notes of your own to these medical workers and these first responders. And so what a fantastic story. I love seeing these star athletes of the Loco, for these guys dropping the golf clubs and focusing on what really matters right now. So well done to all of them.
I think right now the biggest thing that I learned with this whole situation is we're at the point in our society and what's going on right now that everyone needs to help each other. I think that's what something we need to rely on is helping each other. And especially, you know, the people who are really handling this at the front line, the first responders, and something like this, obviously a great look for two very talented golfers. And hopefully this will inspire other kids. I mean, just anybody. I mean, there's no age with this. I mean, I think these two should be looked up to as they're doing something very special right now. And it's very, very cool of them to do that. Very cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And don't have all the details yet, so I'll be kind of vague about it. But we are working behind the scenes to do our own thing to give back. Keep an eye out, hopefully here in the next few days. But working on a little T-shirt benefit to help out some local charities and hopefully rally the community. So we'll have some news about that coming out soon. But we want to do our part as well and try to give back. Like you said, Carlo, we all need to help each other through this. We are really, even though we're apart right now, we really are in it together. And hopefully everyone realizes that more now than ever. And whenever this is over, hopefully we can carry that through, you know, into our normal lives as well and make it a point to help others and lift each other up. So I think some good can still come of this. There's going to be a lot of bad and a lot of sad, but I think some good can come out of it as we move forward from it. And things like this are absolutely an inspiration, and you really get to see people's true heart during this time. So,
and you know what? You know how we have military appreciation and all that stuff? I think after this is over, when we get back to normalcy, we're going to have first responder, medical people, ceremonies throughout athletic events and throughout functions around the community, because what these guys are doing throughout this time is just phenomenal.
Yeah, truly amazing. So listen to the doctors, listen to the scientists, and do what they suggest, and hopefully we can get through this you know, as quickly and with as little devastation as possible. And until it's over, we'll at least once a week we'll keep talking to you about local sports related news and trying to give you a brief distraction from it all, keep you up to date and keep talking to each other. It's fun to get together on here and talk a little sports and remember that we're all going through the same thing together.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for another edition of the Loco Sports Lowdown podcast. We'll be back to do it again next week. Thanks for being a part of it. And until next time, go Loco.